For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is September the 10th. We are in Shmuel Beis, and we are up to Perek Vav, chapter 6. By Yosef O David es kol bachur Yisrael, be Yisrael, Shloshim Aleph. And David continued to gather the young men of the Jewish people, 30,000. Now, what it means continued to gather is because they had gathered together in Hebron when they first came to rally around him as king, and now he's in Yerushalayim, he gathered them together again. And David and all of the men who all the nation that was with him went from Bala Yehuda lahalos misham esaron ho Elokim, to bring up from there the Ark of Hashem. We know from Shmuel Aleph that the history of the Aron, let's briefly recount it, and then we'll finish this verse. Recall that the Jewish people, when they went to war, never took the Aron, the Ark, that had the second set of Luchos in it. The second set of Luchos, the second tablets, which were not the ones that were not broken, were placed in the Ark that was in the Beis HaMikdash. Of course, the Beis HaMikdash has not yet been built, but it was first in the Mishkan, in the Tabernacle, and then it was behind the curtain in the area of the Mizbeach, where the altar was, which was first in Gilgal when they first came to Eretz Yisrael, and then it was moved to Shiloh. Then the Plishtim attacked and destroyed Shiloh, and they took the Aron with them. They took away the Aron. The Aron then caused big problems for the Plishtim. Wherever the Aron was, they were afflicted in all kinds of terrible ways. And so they sent the Aron back. We will talk about how they sent the Aron back shortly, because it's going to be relevant to what we're going to talk about tonight. They sent the Aron back to the Jewish people. The Jewish people, first in, I think it's Beis Shemesh, actually, were the first Jews to get the Aron back. They did not treat the Aron properly, and as a result, they also were afflicted. So the Aron was then diverted, and it went to where it is now, which is Bala Yehuda, which actually is called something else over there. Let's find where it is over there. And yeah, it was Beis Shemesh is where it went first. And they mistreated the Aron, which we'll talk about again what they did. And then it went to Kiryas Yearim, which is Bala Yehuda, the same thing. And there, they went to the house of Avinadav, and Avinadav was appointed to watch over the Aron. And that's where it stayed from the time that the Plishtim sent it back until now, which has been a number of years. It's been a while, because the Plishtim sent it back during the time of Shmuel, and since then we've had Shmuel's acting as Shofet. He was in charge. Then we had the Shaul and David, and the first 7 years of David. So it's been, I don't want to say exactly how long it's been since it was there, but it's probably around 15 years or something like that, that it's been in this place. And now they're going to bring the Aron from there up to Yerushalayim. Now that they have Yerushalayim, they have Ir David, now they're going to bring the Aron up. That's what the goal is right now. So I really don't want to get bogged down in questions. If you have something which you don't understand, I'm willing to answer, but otherwise I want to keep moving over here. No? Okay, fine. So we have to read through the whole parak before we're able to discuss. Now, so this Aron, the Ark, was there. Now, there was another Aron. There was a second Ark. The second Ark contained in it the Shivrei Luchos, the broken tablets. That's the one they normally took to war with them. But in the time of Eli, they made the mistake of taking the number one Aron, the Aron that had the second set of Luchos, the one, the official Aron, they took it to war and it was taken by the Plishtim. And now it has resided in the home of Avinadav, and now David his intention is to bring the Aron back to Yerushalayim. So now again, the pasuk says, I'm going to go back another one line, Lahalos Misham, to bring up from there Es Aron Hu Elokim, the Aron of Hashem, Ashanikra Shame Hashem Tzvakos Yoshev Akruvim Alav, that it was called the name of Hashem of hosts, the one who dwells amongst the Kruvim, amongst the cherubs, on it. So that is a title for Hashem Tzvakos, the one who dwells amongst the Kruvim. The reason why it says dwells amongst the Kruvim is because, for those of you who attend Sunday Night Shir, you know that the top of the Aron had the Kaporet, which had the two Kruvim on top of it, and Hashem's divine presence was there in the middle of the Kruvim. Why does it say that it was called the name of Hashem, repeating Shem, the word Shem Hashem? That is because the name of Hashem was written in the Aron. I assume it means on a piece of parchment, it was written in the Aron. And all the names of Hashem, both the official name that we use, which is Yud Kei Vav Kei, plus whatever of the longer names that we no longer have, and all of the Kinuyin, all of the lesser names that we use for Hashem, like Elohim, Shakai, Tzvakos, all those other names, Kael, all the other names of Hashem, they were all written in the Aron. So they are now going to bring this Aron up to, it doesn't say to where, but we know they want to go to Yerushalayim. Vayakivu es Aron ho Elohim el Agala Chadasha. And they, literally means they rode the Aron of Hashem on a new wagon. So they placed the Aron on a wagon, a brand new wagon, apparently built for this occasion. Vayisa'uhu, and they carried it, mi beis Avinadav asher b'Giba, from the house of Avinadav that was in the Giba on the hill. V'uza ve'achyo b'nei Avinadav. Avinadav had two sons, Uza and Achyo, the sons of Avinadav. Nohagim et ha'agala chadasha, they were leading this new wagon. They were the ones who were leading it along to the place where it had to go. They carried it from the home of Avinadav that was in the Giva, im Aron Elokim, with the Aron of Hashem, meaning they brought along the wagon with the Aron of Hashem. The Achyo holech lifnei ha'aron. Achyo was going in front of the Aron. So Achyo seems to be the one who was, he was in front, which means Uza, it doesn't say, but he must have been walking along the Aron. Now what mistake are they making?
Because
the pasuk says that you're supposed to carry the Aron on your shoulders. We know that when the Nisim, when the princes gave as a gift for the inauguration of the Mishkan, they gave a gift, and the gift was covered wagons, six covered wagons. Moshe Rabbeinu took four of them and gave them to the Bnei Mirari, because they had the heaviest load. Two of them went to the Bnei Kehas, Gershon, who had a lighter load, but the Bnei Kehas did not get any wagons, because Avodat HaKodesh Aleihem, they had the service of the sanctified utensils, Bakasef Yisau, they shall carry on the shoulder. So they are making a mistake. The Pasuk says explicitly, you're supposed to carry the Aron on your shoulder, which of course means the poles of the Aron on your shoulder. You're not supposed to put it in a wagon. This is such an elementary mistake that the Gemara says, Afilu tinokos shel beis rabban yodinoso. Even the little children know this. So clearly, for the Jews to make this mistake, for David HaMelech, the greatest Torah sage of his generation, to make this mistake, and all the other Torah scholars, although Talmidei Chachamim, it's obviously there's something going on. It doesn't just happen by itself.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Are you saying that David also made the mistake?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. V'David v'chol beis Yisrael mesachakim l'sei Hashem. David and all the Jewish people were, literally this means they were playing in front of Hashem. It means they were joyous. They were very happy in front of Hashem. B'chol atzei v'roshim, with all b'roshim wood, which is a type of wood that's easy to make instruments out of it. Uvechinoros, uvinvolim, uvesupim, uvimnaanim, uvetzeltzelim, all types of instruments. They were playing all kinds of music as the Aron was being moved. A very joyous time they're playing the music. Vayavo ad goren nachon, and they came to the vineyard of Nachon. Vayishlach Uza el Aron ho'elokim bayochezbo. Uzzah sent, meaning his hand, to the Aron of Hashem, and he grabbed onto it. Why did he grab it? Ki shamtu habakar, for the cattle had loosened, had slipped the Aron. The Aron was slipping off of the wagon. Vayicharaf Hashem b'Uzzah. Hashem became angry with Uzzah. Vayakehu shamu elokim al hashal, and Hashem struck him down over there on Al-Hashal. Al-Hashal has two meanings. We're going to use one now, and perhaps we'll get to the other one later, I hope. Al-Hashal means because of his negligence. He was negligent, and therefore Hashem struck him. Vayomas Sham im Aron HaElokim. He died there with the Aron HaElokim. What does it mean, he died there with the Aron HaElokim? The Aron HaElokim didn't die. So what do you mean, he died there with the Aron HaElokim? It means that he died, but the Gemara says he went to Olam Haba. That he was not a Rasha, he was not an evil person. This death was an atonement for his sin, and he went straight to Olam Haba. That's what it means, with the Aron of God. What was his negligence? What did he specifically do wrong? What was negligent about what he did? It was a mistake that the Jews did in general, including David HaMelech, that they put the Aron on a wagon, but what was the mistake, the particular negligence that Uzzah did?
He touched it,
but so he saw it slipping off. So if it's going to fall, of course he should grab it. What's he supposed to do? So the Gemara says that Hashem said to Uzzah, doesn't mean he spoke to him, it's figuratively Hashem said, Uzzah, you should have known better. If we found back in Sefer Yehoshua, which I acknowledge we have not yet learned together, but it says in Sefer Yehoshua that when the Jews crossed the Yarden, they crossed the Jordan River, what happened? When the Jews crossed the Jordan River, Hashem told Yehoshua that the Kohanim should carry the Aron. It wasn't the Levim, it was the Kohanim then, unusually. And they took one step, they got their feet wet, they stepped into the Yarden, the Jordan. When that happened, the water, instead of flowing downstream, flowed up in the air. It just started flowing up in the air. And the Jewish people, the rest of the water went downstream, and now you had an empty riverbed. In those days, the Yarden was much wider than it is today. And the Jews crossed into the Yarden as the water went right up in the air. The Jews got into the middle of the Yarden. There was no water there. It was dry. And there Yehoshua made a covenant with the Jewish people that we had to keep the Torah. And the threat was that if not, the waters of the Yarden would come and drown them all. And they made a covenant, and they took stones from the Yarden, and they wrote the Torah, and then they walked out of the Yarden. Meanwhile, this whole time the Kohanim were on the wrong side, on the east side of the Jordan River, with just having stepped one footstep into the riverbed. And then the Jews finished crossing, and then the water came back down. Meanwhile, the Kohanim and the Aron were still on the wrong side. They were on the east side. Everybody else was on the west side. As soon as the river finished, now it's flowing back to normal, the Aron lifted itself up in the air. The Kohanim were now lifted above the water, and they teleported over over the water and went to the other side. So they floated over the water, holding the Aron to the other side. So Hashem said, figuratively, to Uzzah, if the Aron can carry those who carry it, no say as no sav, it can carry those who carry it, certainly it can carry itself. And therefore, you should not have grabbed it, it would not have fallen down. The Aron can carry itself. And therefore, he was struck down and he was killed. Obviously, if Hashem killed Uzzah for this, that means Hashem expected Uzzah to know better. Meaning that this was not some sort of secret that Uzzah wouldn't have been aware of. Hashem clearly was disappointed with Uzzah's choice because Uzzah knew better. And therefore he was struck down. But Uzzah was a tzaddik, and therefore he did go to Olam Haba. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Vayicha leDavid, and David was upset al asher parat Hashem peretz beUzzah, that Hashem had made an example of Uzzah. That Hashem now had, Uzzah essentially was the carbon, he was the sacrifice. He got struck down. Clearly, Hashem was making an example out of Uzzah. Vayikra l'makom ahu peretz Uzzah, they called the place peretz Uzzah. Peretz means to break forth, to like break open a wall. So that Uzzah was struck down. Arayom hazeh, until today. That's the name of the place, Peretz Uzzah. Vayira David es Hashem bayom ahu, David feared Hashem on that day. Vayom, and he said, Eich yavo elai aron Hashem, how could the aron of Hashem come to me? I can't bring the aron of Hashem to Yerushalayim. Clearly, it can't come right now. We are not ready for the aron. We don't know how to treat it properly. David did not want to bring, to move the aron of Hashem to the city of David. Vayatehu David, and David instead diverted it, base Oved Edom HaGiti, to the house of Oved Edom the Giti. Oved Edom was a Levi, and the Aron now was moved to his house. So if you just, you're Oved Edom, and you know what happened to Uzzah, you know what happened a number of years ago to the people of Beis Shemesh. Now at Avinadab's house, apparently things went well. But Avinadab's own son, Uzzah, did not handle the Aron properly on the way to Yerushalayim, and now it's being diverted to your house. You've got to be a little bit nervous. Right? The Aron of Hashem remained in the house of Obed Edom the Giti for 3 months. Hashem blessed, he benched Obed Edom and his entire house. The Gemara says, in what way was Obed Edom benched? Obed Edom was blessed in the manner that he had 8 sons. That's prior to this. He had 8 sons. And all those sons were married. So he has 8 daughters-in-law. That's all before this episode. He has 8 daughters-in-law, and he has a wife. So there are 9 married women in Obed Edom's family. His wife and 8 daughters-in-law. All 9 of them had 6 children in one pregnancy.
Oh, that was a blessing.
Okay. So he had. I know it sounds funny, but you have to hear it very well. That's a very good question, actually. He had 54 children, 6 of his own, and 48 grandchildren. The pasuk of Divrei Hayamim says that he had 8, and then it says he had 62. Because he went from having 8 children to having 62 children. 54, meaning children and grandchildren, born in this period of time. Now, obviously, it says 3 months. So it doesn't mean there were 3-month pregnancies, I think. But whatever it is, it happened that they had all these children. You understand, not only did every one of his daughters-in-law had 6 children in one shot, but their mother-in-law was unavailable to help them. Because she did too, right? Okay, so you see, if this is called a bracha, which it is, you see that it doesn't mean, when we say that Hashem gave a bracha to the Jews in Mitzrayim, that they had 6 in Bekeres Echad, Shisha Bekeres Echad, 6 in one pregnancy, that obviously they didn't have scrawny, dangerously small preemies. They had fully developed 6 children in one pregnancy. They didn't have to be on incubators, they didn't have to be in the hospital, they didn't have to be in the NICU, they were all fine. Otherwise, it's not the full bracha. The full bracha is 6 fine, healthy children in one time. That's what they had. And they were all given the strength to handle 6 children at one time. It's a massive bracha. It's a huge bracha for that to happen. So when this happened, clearly this is a nace. This is way beyond natural. So when that happened, Vayugad LaMelech David, this was told to the king David, Lamar, saying, Deirach Hashem es beis Obed Edom, ves kol hashalom, Hashem benched the house of Obed Edom and all that he has. Ba'avu Aron of Elohim, it's obviously because of the Aron of Hashem. Vayelech David went, Vayal es Aron of Elohim beis Obed Edom. He brought up the Aron Elokim from the house of Obed Edom, Ir David, to the city of David, Besimcha, with happiness. We will need to explain, what does the fact that there was a bracha on the house of Obed Edom have to do with David having somehow learned a lesson about how to bring the Aron up to Yerushalayim? Before, David realized that it was a mistake, that something had gone wrong. Now, it's corrected itself. How, maybe a, this may be symbolic that something corrected itself, but what was corrected? We're going to talk about that.
Rabbi,
yeah.
If it was only there 3 months, were they already pregnant?
I don't know. That's on that before. I'm not sure what the sequence was. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. I don't know whether it was miraculous that they became pregnant and had children in 3 months, or whether they were pregnant before, or whether they had all had sonograms showing that they had 6 coming up in 6 more months. I don't know. Vayihi ki tzadu nose aron Hashem shisha tzadim. And it was when those who carried the aron, now they were carrying the aron, when they took 6 steps, vayizbach shor mari, then they sacrificed an ox, a bull, and I think it's a sheep. No.
Fat ox.
Shor is an ox, and a mari is a fattened ox. Right. So they took 6 steps, and then they offered 2 sacrifices. The Gemara says, what this pasuk means is, every 6 steps, they offered 2 sacrifices. Every 6 steps they took, they offered more sacrifices. The David mechar ker b'chol oz lifnei Hashem. These are going to be hard words to translate. David was dancing with all strength in front of Hashem. Mechar ker, though, is more than dancing. Mechaker doesn't mean dancing like people do on Friday night in the shul, where they kind of shuffle around the bima. It doesn't even mean what they do at chasana. It means like you see on Purim. We're talking absolute abandon in front of Hashem. The David chogor efod bad. David was wearing a simple white coat, meaning he was not wearing his royal garments. He was wearing regular clothing. David and all the house of Yisrael were bringing up the Aron of Hashem with the truloh and kol shofar with blowing the shofar. V'haya Aron Hashem brought your David, and the Aron of Hashem came to the city of David. Michal b'Shaul nishkafa b'arachalon. Michal, the daughter of Shaul, looked out the window. V'atere es hamelech David. She saw the king David mefazez u'mecharker lifnei Hashem. Now you have another word. Not just mecharker, which means to dance with abandon, but mifazez, another word to mean complete loss of control. Absolutely, I don't have words for it. You have to picture David HaMelech completely dancing with wildly dancing, no sense of any kind of propriety in front of Hashem. And he was degraded in her heart. She thought that was inappropriate. They brought the Aron of Hashem. They put it in its place, Besoch HaOel, in the tent. They hadn't yet built the Beis HaMikdash. Asher not alo David, that David had put up for it. Vayal David Olos lifnei Hashem Ushlamim. Then David brought up more sacrifices, Olos, burnt sacrifices, and Shlamim, peace offerings in front of Hashem. Vayechal David meha'alos ha'ola ve'ashlamim. David finished bringing up the ola and the shlamim. Vayevarech ha'sa'am, he benched the nation. B'shem Hashem tzvakos, in the name of Hashem of hosts. Vayechalek l'chol ha'am l'chol hamon Yisrael. And he gave out to all the nation, to all the multitudes of the Jews, l'me'ish ve'arisha, for man to woman, everybody, got the following. L'ish, here it means for each person. The second word, l'ish, doesn't mean for each man, it means for each person. Chalas lechem achas, one loaf of bread, ve'eshpar echad, and 1/6 of a bull, which means they slaughtered bulls, and they gave out 1/6 of the animal to each person, va'ashisha echad, and 1 barrel of wine. Every person in Klal Yisrael got, I guess that means every adult, got bread, wine, and meat. That's a lot of food to give out to every single person. So everybody went home. You can imagine they went home happy. They went home with provisions to have a festive meal to celebrate the homecoming of the Aron. David then returned to bench his own home. David Michal Bashol came out to greet David. And she said, Manich bar hayom melech Yisrael. How honored today is the King of Israel. Asher nigla hayom le'enei amhos avadav, that he revealed himself today in front of the maids of his servants. Ki galos niglos achar harekim, like one of the empty ones reveals himself. You degraded your post. You're the king, and you acted in an inappropriate manner in front of the maids of the people, meaning you let yourself go in a way that was absolutely wrong for a king to do. And here we have the statement of David. This is one of the seminal statements of David HaMelech. This is one of the ones that for us tells us who David HaMelech was. Vayomer David al Michal, and David said to Michal, Lifnei Hashem, asher bachar bi me'avich u'mikol beiso, in front of Hashem, who chose me over your father and over all his entire household, litzavoso sino ginalam Hashem al Yisrael, to command me as a leader over the nation of Hashem, over Yisrael, v'sichakti lifnei Hashem, and I played, I was joyous in front of Hashem. Now we have to understand why he has to emphasize. What is he rubbing it in?
Yeah.
He chose me over your father, so we have to talk about that. Unikalosi od mizos. I should be more degraded than this. Yoyisi shafal be'enai, and I should be lowly in my eyes. V'im ha'amahos asher amart, and with the maids that you said, imam ikaveda, with them I will be honored. The more that I degrade myself in front of Hashem, the more I will be honored. I will be respected by the maids that you were talking about. Ulmichal Bashol Lahoyalal Yoled Ad Yomosel. Michal Bashol did not have any children until the day she died. The Gemara says she had children prior to this episode, but after this episode she no longer had any children. Which means that David was right, Michal was wrong, and somehow not having children was an appropriate punishment to Michal. It was Mida Keneged Mida, was somehow measure for measure, which we have to talk about what that is. We have a multitude of things to talk about, and we're going to have to keep moving along. If someone does not understand something that I say, I encourage you to ask. Other than that, I have to ask you to reserve your own comments for a later time. This is a packed barrack. If you were to choose one word to describe what this chapter is about, it would be... What's that?
Vayehi.
I knew what you said.
Vayehi, it's always a trouble.
Trouble, okay, okay, Vayehi, good. Because that's true. This parak is about boundaries. It is about boundaries. It is defining boundaries. When you have someone or something that you need to treat with deference, so it's easy. Just act in a deferential manner. When you have something or something that you don't need to treat with any kind of deference, it's also easy. Don't treat them with any kind of deference. It's fine. Simple. When you have someone or something which you're supposed to treat with deference, but at the same time with familiarity, it's very difficult. How does one draw the line between familiarity and deference? You see, we Jews are told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to visit us on Rosh Hashanah. Right? So the king is coming. That means you got to act with deference. Which means the way we act on Rosh Hashanah has to be different than we act the rest of the year. Rosh Hashanah is not a regular Yontif. It's not Sukkot. It's not Pesach. It's not Shavuos. On Rosh Hashanah, Hashem is here. And therefore, we have to act with much more deference than we normally do. A person has to examine how they sit, how they stand, how they walk, how they talk, how they conduct themselves. Everything must be done recognizing that you have the king as a guest in your home. That's a very, very serious thing which requires all kinds of deference. On the other hand, Rosh Hashanah is not Yom Kippur. We don't fast. We don't daven all day. On Rosh Hashanah, we have festive meals. We are told to enjoy the Yontif. Simcha. How do you do that? How does one at the same time have the deference, which seems to be like a Yom Kippur, but also have the joy that seems to be like Sukkot? How do you combine those two things? And the pasuk says, "V'gilu bir'ada," you should gilu, you should rejoice bir ada, with trembling. That seems to be contradictory. But we Jews are expected to do that every year on Rosh Hashanah. Why? Because that is the proper way to treat the Shechina. Hashem wants us to have deference for Him, but He also wants us to have a familiarity because we are His people. And we have a special relationship with Him that no one else has. He wants there to be both. How do you draw that line? This is the issue with the Aron. The Aron represents Hashem. When the Aron was brought back from the Plishtim, it was brought back first to Beis Shemesh. And the people of Beis Shemesh were punished the way they treated the Aron. Why? The Gemara says one of the two opinions is because they bowed as the Aron came while they were doing their work in the field. They didn't stop their work in the field to run and greet the Aron. They bowed, but they continued their work. That was considered to be too much familiarity. They were not deferential enough to the Aron. So the Aron was diverted to the house of Avinadav, and there it stayed for many years. Now it's coming to Yerushalayim. And now the Jews make a mistake, and they put it on a wagon. They put it on a new wagon. Now, first of all, why did David make this mistake? I told you, to make such an elementary mistake couldn't just be, you know, David just, he just forgot. It can't be. Even the kids would know better. So the Gemara says David here was being punished because he says in Tehillim, Zmiros hayumi chukecha, your words of Torah, your statutes, were to me zmiros. What is a zmiros? What is zemer? Song. Your Torah, your statutes, were a song to me, Hashem, which the Mefarshim explained means David was saying, all those years that I was running from Sheol, and I was not settled. I had all kinds of tzaras, I had all kinds of troubles. What preserved me? Your Torah. And being immersed in your Torah was like a song to me. Hashem said to David, the words that are so important that the Pasuk says that if you blink your eyes and take your eyes away from it, you lose it. You have to be so careful not to forget any word of Torah. You're calling it a song? That's how you refer to the Torah? Says Hashem, I'm going to make you forget something so elementary that even the little kids know it, to show you that's not how you talk about Torah. Now I ask you, when David HaMelech was talking about the Torah, was he saying it in a degrading manner? The Torah is only a song? Did he mean the Torah is a rock song? Is that what he meant? What did he mean it's like a song? What did he mean by that?
You're so familiar with that name.
Well, that's what we're going to get to.
Joyous.
He meant it gives me such joy. It's so, right? That's what he meant. So, but Hashem was telling him that subtly, there's something wrong with that. The Torah is too important to refer to it as a song. You can say that it's beautiful, that it restored my soul, that it preserved me, but to call it a song degrades it. It cuts it down a notch. And David HaMelech, on his madrega, on his level, was taken to task for it. And as a result, he was made to forget something that even the little kids knew. Now, Hashem could have made him forget that Shabbos is the seventh day of the week. Right? Hashem could have made him forget that the mezuzah goes on the right side of the door. He didn't have to make him forget this. If he made him forget this, it must be that this is going to inform him and everybody else about how to properly treat the Torah. Meaning, the mistake that he made with the Torah is the same mistake that was made with the Aron. There was, as was mentioned, a familiarity. The Torah itself is the same issue as Hashem, as the Shekhinah, as Rosh Hashanah. The Torah, on one hand, is the word of Hashem. It's not just any prophecy. It is the word of Hashem directly from Moshe Rabbeinu. And it precedes the world. It is everything. It is our entire lives are bound up with the Torah. And we need to treat the Torah with complete deference, as we do. We stand up. Whenever the Torah is moved, we stand up. We kiss the Torah. We treat it with incredible deference. On the other hand, we're very familiar with the Torah. we Jews, it's not something we put in a glass case and put it on display, and you know, and you come once a year as a pilgrimage. The Torah, we're familiar with it. We read it once every 3 days. It's read from. We dance with it on Simchas Torah. We have books that copy the Torah, and we read from them, we study them. There's a lot of familiarity with the Torah. Well, which one is it? Is it deference? Is it familiarity? Well, it's both. How does one do that? So, David HaMelech cut the line a little bit too familiar, and here, the Jews cut the line of the with regarding the Aron a little bit too much on the familiar side. And as a result, they are punished. Uzzah makes a mistake, another mistake, in that he grabs the Aron. He acts on a little bit too familiar a level with the Aron to reach out and grab it, forgetting that deference, the greatness of the Aron, it can carry those who carry it. Of course it can carry itself. Forgetting that point because of the familiarity. Why did they make, why they put it on a new wagon? Why did they do that?
Sacrifices that they give can be should be an animal
that
has any
halacha. Okay, good. Very good.
Used for other work.
Good.
So the same thing with the Aron, it should be a wagon that wasn't used for other work, which would probably mean a new one.
Okay, good. Not all sacrifices need to be without a yoke, but there is such a category. But we had a new wagon with the Aron before.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody remember where?
When the
Plishtim sent the Aron back, they didn't send it back. What they did is they wanted to test the Aron to see if it really wanted to leave. So they got a new wagon, which the oxen were not used to pulling. They took mother oxen, they put the babies locked up in a barn, so the babies were calling out to their mothers to see what would happen. And they hitched up those oxen to the new wagon with the Aron, and the oxen made a beeline for Eretz Yisrael. They ignored their children, just went straight to Eretz Yisrael as if nothing was amiss. That proved that the Aron did not belong with the Plishtim. It belonged with Hashem. It belonged with the people, with the Jewish people. Here it appears that David HaMelech, making the mistake about not carrying it on your shoulder, making that mistake and putting it on, but it seems that he felt he wanted to mimic the last time the Aron was moved, which was in a Galach Hadash, in a new wagon. That does show a certain respect for the Aron, because it's saying the Aron doesn't need a team of oxen that is used to pulling this wagon. That's not necessary. Not only that, if you're going to put the Aron on a wagon, you're going to put it on a wagon that was used by somebody else or something else. You're going to put it on the wagon that used to carry hay? Right. You know, what kind of thing is that? Of course, if you're going to put it on a wagon, it's got to be a brand new wagon that's made specifically for the Aron. So there is some deference going on over here. There is some respect going on. But still, it's a little bit too much on the familiar side. And Uzzah makes the same mistake, and he is struck down. When this happens, David recognizes the mistake. The mistake is, we were too familiar. And he fears Hashem. And he says, it's not time now to bring the Aron up to Yerushalayim. We need to sit, think about it, and learn our lesson. And move that line a little bit more to the deferential side, away from the familiar side. We're a little bit too familiar. So we need to move it a little bit. We need some time. And we'll see what happens in the house of Obed-Edom. Obed-Edom evidently was a person who exemplified this idea of having deference while at the same time being familiar. Why? The Levim and the Beis HaMikdash have different roles. Most people know that the Levim and the Beis HaMikdash did what? What did they do?
They sang.
They sang. We know that in the Midbar, in the wilderness, they carried the items. But there was another very significant job that they did besides singing.
They cleaned up?
They did clean up, yes. They did. But they also
had the keys to the gates.
They opened and closed the gates. They unlocked and locked the gates of the Beis HaMikdash. There was no Beis HaMikdash at this time, but wherever the Mizbeach was, they were in charge of, they were the gatekeepers. What is not so well known is this. If you were a singer, you couldn't be a gatekeeper. And if you were a gatekeeper, you couldn't be a singer. And it wasn't your choice. your family of Levim were either gatekeeper Levim or singer Levim. It wasn't, you didn't get to choose. Obed Edom was a gatekeeper Levi. The gatekeeper Levi symbolizes this notion of boundaries more than anybody else, because his job in life is to be someone who keeps the boundaries. The doors get open now, and now they get closed. And this is when they open, this is when they close. And this is who's allowed to go in, and this is who's not allowed to go in. That's what a gatekeeper does. A gatekeeper is someone who is very knowledgeable and very accustomed to understanding subtle boundaries. Oved Edom, therefore, gets the Aron, and he treats the Aron properly. And as a result, all these children are born. Before I go further, let me mention to you what the other meaning, back in Pasuk, Zion, verse 7, the other meaning of Al-Hashal, that Hashem struck Uzzah there on the shal. I told you that the simple meaning is because of his negligence. The Gemara says there's another meaning for Al-Hashal, which is that it has to do with relieving oneself. Because during the trip, now remember, in those days when you traveled, there were no rest stops. There was no such thing. When one traveled, if one needed to relieve oneself, one left the road, went to some secluded area, and relieved oneself and then came back. Uzzah, like everybody else who was traveling, needed to relieve himself. That was normal. There's nothing wrong with that. And the way that he relieved himself apparently was secluded from people, but it was not completely secluded from the Aron. It was in front of the Aron, not, God forbid, in a degrading manner. He didn't act in a way that was meant to put down the Aron. But the Aron's not a person. The Aron isn't. There's no shame with the Aron. It's a box. So he did not completely seclude himself from the Aron. As a result, he is struck down. Now remember, Uzzah is a tzaddik. Uzzah knows how to treat the Aron. He's not, as we say later, one of the empty ones. He knows what he's doing. So evidently, again, we have this issue of familiarity, that he has deference for the Aron, but there's enough familiarity that he doesn't feel it necessary to completely seclude himself from the Aron when relieving himself. And as a result, he was struck down. That's another explanation the Gemara says.
What's the word that they
used? It's a little bit difficult to show the etymology of that word and how it would fit. There is a verse that says, "Ki yishal zeisecha," that your olives will fall off the tree. So it refers to something going from up to down. That's what the Gemara says. So so now Oved Edom treats the Aron properly. He has the big bracha of all the children being born. Now notice, what's the bracha that Oved Edom gets?
Children.
What is the punishment for Michal?
No children.
No children. Okay, so let's keep that in mind. David is told about this, and he recognizes that this is a siman, this is a sign that they have gotten the message. And now they're going to bring the Aron back. Now they do things differently. First of all, they carry it on their shoulders. Second of all, they bring karbonos as they go. No one is going to forget that they are in the service of Hashem. They are constantly bringing karbonos. But at the same time, David lets loose. David just lets himself go. Complete abandon while dancing in front of the Aron. As if he were drunk. That's how he dances in front of the Aron. So, what's going on here? We thought the problem was he was too familiar. And now we're trying to be more deferential. And now he's letting himself go. So, David has learned the boundaries. Yes, we have to be more deferential. That is, we have to carry it on our shoulders. We have to offer karbonos. We don't touch it with our hands. If we need to relieve ourselves, we do it in a way that is completely secluded. On the other hand, there is a familiarity. that familiarity still needs to be maintained. The goal is not to be so deferential that we have no familiarity. And David says, I'm only a king vis-a-vis people. This is the Aron representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm not a king in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm just a regular person. He does not wear his royal garments. He wears a regular garment, and he lets it. We're happy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, and he lets himself go, complete abandon. Michal sees this and feels the line is still too familiar. That's what she believes. It's too much. And she admonishes David for this and says that you have degraded the office of king in front of the maids. It was the wrong thing to do. Michal is not commenting on the question of how familiar or deferential one should be with the Aron. She's commenting about the king. Everybody else can let themselves go with abandon in front of the Aron, but not the king, because the king has to carry himself with a shtolz, and people have to see that, and you can't degrade the office of the king.
What's the presence. Could she also be from the Melech of Kadosh Baruch Hu?
What?
As a Kadosh Baruch Hu?
Yeah, because the Melech represents a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right. So David says to her, you have it wrong. The reason why Hashem chose me over your father, and the reason why Hashem chose me over anybody else in your father's household, is this point. Because what Shaul represented was a misunderstanding of the boundaries. And we can't go back to the whole Shmuel Aleph and go through Shaul. But if you'll recall, as we were going through with Shaul, I'm talking about before he was running after David. I'm talking about in the early stages of his kingship, where he made some mistakes. Over there, we found that he was a very modest person. But if you recall, sometimes the modesty was used when it shouldn't have been used, and sometimes there was no modesty where there should have been modesty. It was not simple to work it out. Now again, we're talking about Shaul HaMelech. I don't want to be, God forbid, to make the mistake that the Jews make in degrading Shaul's memory. They're going to be punished severely later on in Shmuel Beis, as we will find. The entire Jewish people, a lot of people are going to die because they did not say a proper eulogy for Shaul. So we don't want to be guilty of that. So we're talking on Shaul's level, and a subtle level, there was an issue with this sense of boundaries. And David says to Michal, the reason why Hashem chose me is because I am a person who can understand where the boundaries go. I did make a mistake the first time we moved the Aron, but now I've got it down the way it's supposed to be. And the way it's supposed to be is that you treat it with deference. You definitely treat it with deference, but there's no errors in front of, you can't put on errors in front of the Aron. In front of the Shekhinah, you're a regular person, and you act like a regular person. There's no such thing as a hierarchy of this person. That's not the way it works. You're in front of the Aron, you let yourself go. The people still have to treat David with deference, and therefore, of course, he's going to be in the front of the line in dancing in front of the Aron, because the people have to show respect to David, but David has to shed his own self-respect in front of the Aron. There's no room for that in front of the Aron. And he lets himself go. And David says a very interesting thing. You think that by shedding my self-respect in front of the Aron, people will not be able to respect me anymore. I'm going to destroy the people's deference for the king. But you're wrong. It's just the opposite. When a person sheds his own self-respect in front of the king, in front of Hashem, they earn respect. They gain respect. It's not the other way around. They earn and gain respect from the people. And therefore, he is correct. This line of Unekalosi od nizos, I should be more degraded than this. Vayisi shafal be'enai, I should be lowly in my eyes. That is the way a person is to be in front of Hashem, and therefore Michal is punished. She does not have any children. This is for several reasons. First of all, it speaks to the fact that Michal represents Shaul's line. which is slowly being replaced by David's line, that's just another nail in the coffin, literally, that now there's not going to be any more of Shaul's line through Michal. But in addition, when this boundary is understood properly, like Oved Edom, the bracha is that Hashem pours in the offspring, that there should be more, because they will understand this boundary. And that boundary is the most critical thing that we have in understanding how to serve Hashem properly. Michal doesn't have that boundary well. She's too far to the deferential side, and therefore she is no longer able to have children that would pass on that mistaken level of the boundary. Now, in application, it's hard to apply this. It's a very difficult thing to apply. First of all, it should be noted that for a person to command respect, for a person who is supposed to command respect, to command respect, Michal is correct. You can't act in a manner that's like everybody else and expect to be respected. You know that in we talked about this, that when there was a monarchy, kings were not heirs to the throne, princes. They didn't go to regular school. They didn't just play ball with everybody else. This is such a foreign concept to us because we live in the United States of America where the presidency is a joke, but it became a joke over time. It became a joke over time. The whole idea of playing football on the White House lawn is terrible. It destroys the office of the presidency. It says he's just a regular guy. The whole idea of a president jogging in regular jogging clothes, it destroys the office of the presidency. The president has to have a certain presence that is never shed. My Rosh Hashiva of Weinberg Zalman Racha used to say that the last president of the United States that had any semblance of royalty was FDR. Mm-hmm. He was the last one. Even though FDR was not the greatest president as far as we're concerned, but the fact is there was a semblance of royalty to the point that the papers never showed him as an invalid. They never did. Because they wouldn't do it. He's the president. We can't show him that way. How could we? There's nothing wrong with a person who can't walk. There's nothing wrong with a person. But he's the president. You can't show him that way. Today, are there any boundaries whatsoever? You think any journalist would show any degree of restraint in showing? It doesn't make any, right? But he said, starting with Truman, the whole thing went downhill. He pointed out different things that Truman did, which started to erode that special office of the presidency. And of course, once you got to Clinton, it was all over. I mean, whatever shred of it was left, it was totally eradicated under him, and that's it. It's gone. There's nothing left. There's absolutely nothing left.
Unlike the British monarchy, that's held in.
Well, I can't comment on that. Yeah. You know, so if you are a person that is supposed to be commanding respect, you've got to act that way all the time. You can't take a break. You can't say, well, today I'm going to play ball with the guys. If you play ball with the guys, you're no longer going to be able to command the respect you're supposed to have. A Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar, must be respected, not because of the Torah scholar, but because of the Torah. And if the Torah scholar is meant to be respected, the Torah scholar owes it to the Torah to make sure that he behaves always in a manner that commands respect and does not allow himself to be just one of the guys. That is degrading to the Torah itself. Similarly, anybody in a position of authority, if you want to maintain that, our children in the schooling that they have and they go to school, it's not just that they respect the Rabbeim more than the secular teachers because the Rabbeim are teaching Torah and they're from Jews, and the secular teachers are not necessarily. That's not the only reason. The other part of it is, we all went to school, right? You go to school these days, and teachers show up in shorts. Teachers show up in short sleeves. I mean, they're not dressed the part. They're not dressed in a suit and tie. What do you expect? You expect to come to school in shorts and a t-shirt, and you want the students to treat you with respect? They're not going to respect you, and they're not going to respect the subject you're teaching, because you're saying it's not important. That's not the way to command respect. You command respect with a suit and tie. So there is a certain demand that a person who's supposed to be in a place of respect has to act that way. Now, of course, there's a difference between a Rebbe in a day school where there has to be an interaction with the children, and therefore he does need to interact with them at times and does need to sometimes play ball with them or whatever the issue is. But that's not the same thing as the Rabbi of a Shul. A Rabbi of a Shul is a whole different story. He needs to have the command respect from the entire congregation. That's a different from adults. That's a different interaction. The principal of the school can't play ball with the kids. That's a different, he's got a different level of respect that he has to command. All of this is true when it's not a question of showing respect to Hashem. But when the tables are turned, and now the Talmid Chacham, the Rav of the Shul, the principal of the school, whoever it is now supposed to be on the other end of the equation, instead showing deference and respect, you're one of the guys. You're like everybody else. And therefore, when it comes to Simchas Torah, everybody's supposed to let loose. It's not supposed to be a thing where only the regular people let loose, but the people who are in positions of authority, just the opposite. We're showing respect to Hashem, to the Torah. You got to let loose. There's no room for putting on airs. There's no room for it. And similarly, dancing here in front of the Aron, the times when one is showing respect to Hashem, you got to let loose. On Rosh Hashanah, so we have to have the deference to Hashem, and we have to know that He's here, and therefore we have to act differently. And the acting differently is one that is not just when we're in shul. It's everywhere. I know we're over time, I'm sorry. It's everywhere. It's even when we're sitting at home, whatever it is, we can't just lie back and put our feet up. It's Rosh Hashanah. You gotta sit with respect, stand with respect, even lie down with respect. It's Rosh Hashanah. And Rosh Hashanah, a person needs to be on all the time. Anytime they're awake, they gotta be on. The king is here. But on the other hand, Hashem commands us on Rosh Hashanah to enjoy the yontif. It is a yontif. And we have to enjoy it. We have to have a festive meal. We have to drink wine. We have to eat good food. That's part of Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, we have to also enjoy it. So that's the contradictory pasuk. You should rejoice, v'gilu bir adah, while trembling. So you can feel the tension, right? And that's what it is on Rosh Hashanah. It's only 2 days. But that's the tension of Rosh Hashanah. To be at the same time with great deference and respect, but also we have to enjoy ourselves as well. Yeah.
Two things that are bothering me. It doesn't mention, it says that the ark stayed with Abinadab for a long time, but it doesn't say where he is with this procession or what he does.
Yeah, it doesn't. I'm not sure why.
Okay. And why does it mention whose vineyard is that? That this accident happens, because if the death happens on your land, right, it's supposedly that somehow you're culpable that it happened there.
Yeah, good.
What's this person?
The Gemara says.
Nachon?
Yeah, the Gemara says that Nachon here means. The word Nachon means correct. That's what the word means. Nachon means correct. That, let me just find it quickly because we'll have to end with this. But they came to go in. Hold on. Let's just see if I'm. What's that?
Six.
Thank you. So they came to Gorin Nachon. In Divrei Hayamim, in Chronicles, where the same pasuk appears, it says slightly differently. It says Gorin. Oh, it's Kidon, Kaf Dalet Vav Nun, which means a sword. That it started as Gorin Kidon, as a sword, because it killed somebody, but it ended up being Gorin Nachon, being proper, because they learned their lesson. It's the Gorin that went, it's the vineyard that went from being the Kidon, the sword, to being Nachon.
So it's not the name of a person.
It may also be the name of a person, I don't know, but that's what the Gemara says about this word.
Thank you.
Okay.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.